Welcome to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. Ask for Football is brought to you by our sponsor, BuyerBarn.com. BuyerBarn.com is the world's first online platform for online sales and auctions of farm animals. That's BuyerBarn.com. Don't forget to follow Ask for Football on all social media platforms or sign up for our mailing list at askforfootball.com/subscribe.
Good job, Firsty Club. You guys showed up in strong numbers, so either you're all socked in because of bad weather or you're actually happy to see us. So anyway, welcome back. It is finally here at long last. We have Army football this weekend, which means that you don't have to listen to us talk about the new offense anymore. You can watch it for yourself and take notes. I'm excited. I don't know about the rest of you guys. My name is Rob. I am the Angry Colonel out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. I'm rocking the 2020 jersey tonight. We've got Jordan is flying somewhere over the Dakota, so he is en route back to whatever destination he is coming from. I am sorry that he had to spend a little bit of time in Chicago and San Antonio this week. San Antonio slightly better than Chicago, but only depends on why you're there for business. We've got James. Colin out of OKC. Guys, how are we doing?
Hey, man, I'm good. Sorry, I'm sitting here reading the comments from the Firsty Club. I'm good. Weather's much better here than it is probably where either of you guys are. James looks like he literally got off the airplane about 2 minutes ago. But I'm happy to have him because we got stuff, you know, it's like he's the man of the hour lately.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead, James.
Oh, as you can say, I remember you know, we had had our complaints about how the offense was run last year, sort of all year long. And I found myself defending, what's his name? Brent Davis.
Yeah.
More than I usually do. And the complaints and defense were sort of around the same thing. It just doesn't seem like this scheme is working. And then I guess January, February rolled along, and we got the announcement that Drew Thatcher was the new OC. I think within about 5 minutes of that announcement, I was on the phone with Dan, and I said, "Hey, I want to go ahead and purchase the Drew Thatcher essentially playbook from this website." And I spent about 30-40 hours going through it, looking through it, and more out of interest than anything else. So hopefully I can bring a little bit of that to you guys. If you haven't already asked questions, go ahead and drop them in the chat and I know we'll get there, but yeah, I'm excited for it today.
Yeah. I'm super excited about the new offense as well. I think one of the things that, one of my chief complaints was, and of course I never got blocked by Brent Davis. He's no longer the OC, but I managed to go 2 years on Ask for Football without being blocked. So I'm going to put that feather
in my cap. I wonder if I'm still blocked.
You probably are.
Why would he unblock you?
But I put that feather in my cap. But honestly, I think, you know, looking forward to the new offense, I think the reality of it is it's going to allow more of the weapons that we actually have on the team to touch the ball. You know, it was a two-man, it was a two, sometimes three-person game when you had, you know, T2, Robinson, and Jacoby Buchanan touching the ball. But we had a lot more talented athletes in space. And, you know, Isaiah Alston, when thrown at, made some fabulous catches. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what we could do with a more open scheme. You know, that being said, the scheme is not as completely open as everybody thinks. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. The option is still the option. It's just a different flavor of it. But without further ado, we will go into our first sponsor reading. If you guys didn't check out the College Football Roundtable yesterday, we actually had Dan Robinson on. He popped in to cover down because Trigger Joe was cutting down trees and was lost somewhere around the big house. But our sponsor is Buyer Barn. Buyer Barn's been on Ask for Football for about a year. It's founded by my classmate, Dan Robinson. And Dan ran a traditional farm co-op and realized there's a better way to modernize it and bring it to the 21st century. So he and his co-founder, Dean, took their experience in IT management and development and built the world's first farm-to-farm auction and sales platform. Buyer Barn is great because it reduces health issues, because it reduces the overall animal and owner contact, reduces animal fraud through a buyer and seller rating system, has a fully integrated auction platform with secure payments, so you don't have to walk around with big bags of cash as Dan did when he did his first purchase of goats. He actually had a 45 and a wad of cash, looking more like a New Orleans guy than an actual animal salesman. And then finally, you know, you get convenience to buy and sell at your own time because you can set your prices and set your animals out to market when you're ready to make some, to actually make a move. And of course you get better market pricing because of the wider audience. Think eBay versus a yard sale. Buyer Barn is dedicated to helping small farmers in America, and they are providing a special discount to military veterans who want to assist them in the small family farm revolution. Go to buyerbarn.com or email them at info@buyerbarn.com. Keep in mind, in some states, I believe in New Jersey is definitely one of them, if you have livestock of some sort, you can actually get a farm discount. So if you live in one of those states that have some of those kooky regulations, buy a goat, a llama, you know, they sell everything but horses on buyerbarn.com, and you can utilize them to take full advantage of.
I'm not an accountant, but I'm pretty sure that you just have to have two animals to qualify your house as a farm. Let me tell you, we've gotten close to doing that a couple of times. Like, I'm not above buying two alpacas and sticking them in the backyard just for the tax break.
Yeah, make no mistake.
All right. Yeah, he's got to figure out how to pay that $9.99 a month somehow.
Yeah. So we got to. All right. So Firsty Club, if you guys would not be offended, let's start a GoFundMe so Dan can get two alpacas so he can get ESPN Plus for the rest of the season. Thanks. All right. Once we start laughing, Dan or James, you want to dive into the Army Sports Upstate, or who's taking this one?
I'll do it because James has got the next piece is all him. So this is kind of a long update. Men's soccer beat Air Force 3-2 last Thursday to earn the Silver Star and kick off their season in fine fashion. Both teams scored twice in the first half, but Army scored again in the second. Jabril, God, why did I put his name on here? Bambala, I'm guessing, Joey Hickson, and Drew Clement had goals. The men then lost 1-0 to LaSalle last night at home. Women's soccer lost a heartbreaker in their home opener over the weekend. Final score 3-2. Army led most of the game 2-1, but then Auburn scored the equalizer at the 51-minute mark, took the lead about 10 minutes later. Yearling phenom Bridget Duffy had a goal. Yearling Jordan Follenweider, I hope I said that right, had her first career goal. The women are now 0-3-1 on the season. It's still early. They haven't gotten into conference play. I wouldn't put too much into that. They take on UConn on Thursday night. Army volleyball started the season 1-2 with losses to Fairfield U and Cal at the Army Invitational. They then salvaged something with a win over Connecticut State in three straight sets to close out the tournament. They take on Liberty this Friday. Army football held their third and final scrimmage this past Saturday. This was the ones and twos versus the scout team. So that's more like a practice than a real scrimmage. But, you know, they got out there in game day situations. Bryson Daly supposedly threw four touchdown passes, two to Isaiah Alston, one to Ijon Marshall. I'm not sure who caught the other one. I've got a note in here. James, does this mean that Army's going to throw it a lot more than five times per game? But I know we're going to get into that for a minute, so we'll just cue that one up. Ah, we lost Rob. Rob is getting hammered by the hurricane now, so I may host the rest of this podcast. Hold on. Anyway, finally, Andre Carter has made the initial cut for the Vikings 53-man roster. Elijah Riley has also made the initial cut for the Steelers 53-man roster. And as of this writing, as of this recording, John Rattigan is still with the Seahawks. Looks like Cole Christensen has been waived by the Chiefs, unfortunately. So we'll see how that happens. And before we kick it over to the next thing, and while Rob is repositioning his camera, I'll go through some of these comments. So Brian says, let's go happy to see you. Ray Kimball says, only if he's going to knit the wool. I guess that's for me with the alpacas. Brian says, if you have two Marines staying in the house, does that count? I guess in terms of farm animals, I will say yes, as the son of a Marine. Somebody, I'm guessing that's Greg, says he's not funding my alpacas, but he'll help me cook the goat for the big game, which is fine. And then finally, Ray accused the communists of taking Rob. Oh, and somebody pointed out that Crossan, I hope I said that right, had the fourth touchdown pass. So, Rob, are you back on, or am I hosting this next piece?
No, I'm back on, but I'm on my phone right now because we're in contingency operations. Always have a pace plan.
Okay, so let's go through the offensive overview. James, before we get through, there's like 12 questions in here, but before we do that, you want to just give us your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I don't want to call it a necessary evil because I don't think it's evil, but it's sort of one of those things that's not optimal, but it's what we got. I think that the method that Army has taken to approach the cut blocking rules is better than at the other academies. Navy's approach to Notre Dame was interesting, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be successful over the course of a season. But they're still running a lot of flexbone. Air Force isn't changing what they're doing. So you have to do something, and I'm glad that Jeff Munkin and company are leading the way.
Awesome, man. Yeah, I agree with you. Navy, they ran a combination of fullback trap and option pitch, and
I'll say that
was only going to take them so far.
That dual fullback look was interesting. I don't think that that's the wrong call in a lot of situations. Okay. I don't think you can be using it for 40% of the game like they were, though.
Yeah.
And expect success.
Sure. I mean, you know, Notre Dame was going to eventually adjust, which they did. So, yeah, man. All right. So I, as the host of this program, while Rob is still fooling around with his machine there, get the first question. We saw them working under center this weekend in the scrimmage. Are we going to see some flexbone style midline and or true triple option this Saturday?
I think you're more likely to see midline than triple option.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see a little bit of all of it. It's a tool that they have. It's something these guys have trained to before.
Sure.
So it's something that they have there. I don't think you're going to see a lot of it. The shotgun snap will be the base. And in the past, we saw under center be the base and the shotgun get used as a tool to elicit responses from the defense that they could then exploit. And I see the under center midline getting used the same way.
Okay.
Try to catch the defense off guard or try to get them to bite in a certain way so you can use that later. I wouldn't expect to see a full drive of the flex bone though.
Interesting. All right. So from Jim, we have a question. How does moving the quarterback into the pistol or the shotgun reduce the requirement for cut blocks? This is one of my favorite questions because obviously we saw cut blocking used previously when we were running the old school triple.
Yeah, for sure. So with the reduction of cut blocks, the most important thing now is being able to effectively get to the outside. There's a few reasons that's harder now. One is that your defenses don't respect the fullback dive like they used to, so they don't have to stuff the box like they used to. Service Academy games aside, because that offensive playbook is a little different, we don't see teams stuffing the box like we did in 2018. And they're still able to be successful against our fullback dive where they weren't in 2018. So how do you get the ball to the perimeter effectively when defenses are more spread out than what they used to be? And so number one is getting to the perimeter better and having that angle, having that read on the defensive end be a better read and having more time to make that read. And then second is when you get to the perimeter, what kind of matchups are you getting on the outside? Because without cut blocks, it's really hard to get a wide receiver or a halfback to block a linebacker. Well, now we can do all sorts of crazy things with route running, and we can leave instead of leaving a linebacker or a safety open, we can make that the cornerback. Well, now if you have a cornerback trying to tackle your 210-pound fullback or running back, that's a tough tackle to make if you're a cornerback. No defensive coordinator is going to take his best tackler and put him at corner. Your good tacklers are going to be safeties and linebackers. So, and body type. If you're the same body type as a corner and you're a good tackler, you're going to be a safety, not a cornerback. So it's all about getting those good matchups on the outside with some crackback blocks and things like that and a passing scheme. So that's important, right? You don't need cut blocks on the perimeter anymore. And then the good news is that, yes, it there are some issues with it, but when you give that ball off to the fullback on a fullback dive, it's not I'm going to hit the A gap every time, or maybe it's a call to the B gap or whatever, right? normally in the triple option, you already know what gap you're going to. Now it's a little bit more of like a frozen mesh, like we saw with Wake Forest, where maybe the B gap's more open, maybe the A gap's more open, maybe you got a little room to the outside that's open. I don't know, but I can sit there for a second as a halfback or as a fullback, excuse me, and decide that, okay, my best angle right now is to chase the A back or chase the B back. So you don't need those. We used to have second layer cut blocks on linebackers, which are illegal now. You don't need those. You can instead kind of let that play develop and figure out the best place to go.
Yeah, one of the things that I'll jump in real quick. I've been watching some of the more successful plays from the last season, and what you see is a lot of them were, when they were designed runs, it was zone blocking with a pulling guard or tackle. And so those were kicking out, you know, they were creating those holes and opening up those seams. And it worked a lot better because when teams were stacking the line, zone blocking works a hell of a lot better than trying to cut block, you know, eight guys, because you're going to get that first row, but then you can't continue to scrape and get to the second level. And that's where, you know, normally you see a lot of the tackles that were happening, particularly the tackles for loss, was because that initial line surge was good to get the linemen out of the way, but you got linebackers and safeties that are within 3 yards of the ball. They can see the field and then move towards the line to make the stop. But I think that's a very important part of it as well.
All right, so Greg asks, I'm really curious how they intend to use the fullbacks out of the pistol. Or are they going to shift under center prior to the snap? I wouldn't think they would do that unless it's in a goal line or a short yardage situations, e.g. using Jacoby Buchanan. And I will point out that there are no true fullbacks right now. They're all just running backs, of which there are a ton of them traveling this week.
Yeah, so that's the first thing is if you look at Thatcher's offenses at Nebraska Kearney, granted, this is a, you know, D2 school, so they aren't able to recruit the same way that Army is. But their heaviest running backs, I think, are 205, maybe 210 pounds. So we're not talking about beefy guys. They like their space guys in that offense. That doesn't mean that there isn't a spot for a 250-pound Jacoby Buchanan, right? That's an asset, and you're not going to not use that asset when you can. So in a short yardage situation, yeah, I could see them going under center and using that fullback. But I would imagine, Jacoby Buchanan sort of sitting in a slow mesh next to was it Bryson Daly?
Yeah.
I could see them sitting together, watching a play develop, seeing if there's a hole on the line. And then when a little bit of a hole happens, you have 255 pounds of Buchanan going through. Now, if they can't get that going and Buchanan is able to, or isn't able to get a hole, and that defensive end starts running towards Buchanan, well, yeah, then Bryson's going to pull it and go to the perimeter like you would in a normal triple option. You're not, but what you're getting that extra half a second. Cause when you're 5 yards back, that makes that defensive end run further too. That defensive end isn't running the 2.5 yards to where the mesh is when you're under center. He's also got to run the 5 yards back. So I would just see like an extra half a second on all those things. But that doesn't mean that you're not an effective running back just because you're bigger in the new offense.
Yeah. So similarly, how does moving the fullback back 5 yards affect what used to be a pretty quick hitting play? Right. The fullback dive, its strength is you're handing the ball off a yard behind the line of scrimmage. Here comes a 260-pound guy at you before you even have a chance to react. Mm-hmm. Right. This is not going to occur.
Yeah. Well, and that's a really great way to guarantee you get 2 yards on every play. But you can't average 2 yards. You need to be able to make a man miss at least with some regularity, and that hasn't been happening. And one of the
certainly reasons not that, last year, they without being able to cut block, they were absolutely not able to get into the second level.
Absolutely, yeah, sure. I mean, you couldn't have. I mean, we saw penalties if you read that first article that we put out. I mean, where the O-lineman rolls into a linebacker and it's a 10, 15-yard penalty, right? Mm-hmm. So if you aren't able to effectively block a linebacker on a cut block, it's really hard to average more than 2 yards on a fullback dive. so this gives the fullback, excuse me, a little bit more knowledge about which way to go. And if it can make the outside more effective as well, then those linebackers aren't going to be as willing to bite off on a fullback dive. So, yeah, it does back it up, you know, essentially about 3 yards from the mesh point that it would otherwise be at. But you're gaining a lot out of that too. Again, not ideal. It'd be nice to be able to slap the line with a 255-pound fullback immediately. But you have to make sure that you're not just getting the 2 yards that you can get because you're doing that, but there's a potential for getting 6, 7, 8, or even more yards.
Absolutely. All right. So how is moving from the flex bone run by a lot of high school teams going to affect getting fullbacks that the other service academies are courting? And I know what I think about this one, but I'll kick it over to you since you are answering these questions.
A few different things. Number one, you know, every team sort of has their fullbacks. Army has never had, I would say Army, generally speaking, has never had the best fullback at the academies. This year might be different. Last 2 years, it's been Air Force with what's his face? Maybe Brad even Roberts. More than 2 years. Yeah, Brad Roberts, right?
Yeah, Brad Roberts was the best academy fullback we've seen in some time.
In a long time. In a while. Even in like 2018, right, when Army won 11 games, the strength from Army's fullbacks is that we had 4 very good fullbacks. We didn't have the best fullback. We just always had a fresh fullback because you could switch them out every single play. And over the course of a 18-play drive, you know, one fullback is getting at most 5 plays. So he's always fresh. And in the fourth quarter, you have 4 fresh fullbacks. So I don't know that Army's always gotten the best talent at fullback. I just think that we've utilized them the best. And we've prioritized their success more than other academies. I mean, Munkin, that's what he was. That was his thing when he came to Army, is he said, we're going to win at the line, and we are going to make sure that our fullbacks get 4 yards every play, and you can't stop us.
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing at other academies. They were a little bit more generous with the other 2 options in the triple option. Munkin was not. So I don't think it's a recruiting thing, number one. Number two, you know, none of these guys are showing up at the academy at 255 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing. They might optimize these players' body types differently now that they have a different offense, but it's not like, you know, okay, I'm recruiting this running back and he is going to be the next Brad Roberts. Like, their bodies change a lot after they get there. And there's fullbacks, one of those positions where it's a lot more, I think, just natural ability and not so much, like, it's not a skill thing.
So I would argue that it's about recruiting the kinds of players that you want. And the example that I'll use is the tight ends. As I know, because my friend's son is a recruited tight end, and they wanted him because he can run. You know, not that he can't block, but dude can catch and run. And that is a new thing at Army. Like, in previous years, they wanted big, beefy tight ends who could, you know, you could put him in at guard.
Ollie Villanueva was a recruited tight end, wide receiver.
Anyway, all right. So do you think we'll start employing wheels, especially when they're so good against us, and passes into the flat? I could imagine that if we have those backs take a slot or close out position at the snap, it would be easier for them to get open than those guys out of the backfield. I hope I didn't butcher that question. We're going to start throwing that into the flat?
Yeah, so that's not something that we saw when it came to previous Thatcher offenses. Okay. It's not that we never saw it. We didn't see it often.
Okay.
However, I don't think this is going to be a complete carbon copy. I don't know this, right? This is conjecture.
We're all waiting to see what it actually looks like.
Absolutely. But I think that Matt Drinkle has been talking a long time about doing this sort of thing. And there is a reason that he's a co-offensive coordinator.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that Matt Drinkle knows the value of that sort of thing, whether it's a wheel route or a flat pass or a screen pass or whatever. Or, hey, maybe it's not even that. Maybe it's just a pitch, but instead of going back 1 yard, it's forward 2 yards, right? And there's a lot of advantage to that, which is, you know, the biggest of which is if you drop it, it's not the other team's ball and maybe 6 points.
Yeah, right.
So I think that's a possibility. The disadvantage of throwing forward is that the runner that you're getting the ball to is now looking backwards instead of forwards. So that's the disadvantage of throwing forward. There's a way to employ that where it's an advantage overall, and I would expect to see at least some of that simply because we know that Matt Drinkel has been talking about it for a long time.
Mm. All right, so Brendan says this may be kind of a game of inches thing, but given Army's offensive change and their intention to throw more, understanding that more is a relative term, do the new clock rules and timing rules ultimately help or hurt? Again, I have an opinion here.
Yeah, it's help, absolutely. Yeah. The thing is, if you look at the last 5 or 6 years, how many times, let's just say in the Monken era.
UTSA game is the arch example last year.
Oh, for sure. But I can think of a bunch of others that were close that shouldn't have been close. Think about Eastern Michigan with the 2-point conversion stop. Think about Temple where they had to go to, you know, they went to overtime. Temple might have been a little different. But there are just so many games where if the game were 2 drives shorter, Army wins without question. And there are not that many games where Army wins in the last 2 drives. I really can't think of many. Controlling that clock and reducing the overall number of drives is a good thing for Army. And the intent of this offense is to get more consistency on small yard gains and maybe even to the detriment of, you know, quick scores. I mean, how many different scores over 50 yards did we have last year? Probably more.
It's frustrating because the offense is ostensibly more successful than it's been in a while, and yet you're losing games because
you have all because in addition to 2 70-yard runs, you have 4 3-and-outs. Yeah. Or, you know, right? So it's really hard. You don't want that. You don't want those quick scores when your game is controlling the clock, right?
I've always been sympathetic to Brent Davis's argument that this was working last year. The problem, and I don't know if I agree with that. But
what was the problem?
I can imagine Brent Davis kind of vehemently defending himself, saying, "You know, look at what we did. This was working okay," and I'm sympathetic to that because they really did have a much more explosive offense than we'd seen in a long time.
Sure.
So I'm sure it's frustrating to get.
Here's a great example, by the way. You know the S&P 500 or not S&P Plus, excuse me, football, not stock markets, that Bill Connolly puts out. He will readily admit that the S&P Plus disfavors Service Academy football, and if you look at his criteria for what makes a good offense, it's an offense that is explosive. He really values things like how many 20-yard plays did you have, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How many long touchdown runs and passes did you have?
Yep.
When you run a triple option, if you have too many of those, then you're giving up your advantage. You have to be able to churn out a long drive. If you're not, you're keeping that other quarterback hot all game long. And that's why you lose a game in the last, you know, few drives of a game. Because that other quarterback, he's ready to go when it's go time, and you need to prevent that. So,
well, think of it last year with the quarterbacks that we saw. If you give Walt Harris or Grayson McCall another opportunity to score, they're probably going to score. So, you can control the clock and keep those guys on the sideline, advantage to Army.
You're priding yourself on special teams and defense producing at least a big play or two a game. The more drives you have. And you're also priding yourself on your offense being disciplined enough to not give the other team those big plays.
Yep.
The more drives you have, the less those big plays matter.
Mm.
Correct. Well, and also looking college football at the broader scale, right? Caleb Williams, super explosive offense at USC, still lost to Utah and to Tulane, right? So explosiveness doesn't matter so long as you're on the sidelines. You know, if you can't close out a game because you're not playing – I mean, you don't have the opportunity to win if your defense is still on the field. And so I think there's a sweet spot in there, and only time will tell, you know, if these clock changes help or hurt people. I can tell you that if coaches make bad decisions, if you watch the UTEP game, it doesn't matter how much time is left off the clock because you can shoot yourself in the foot, you know, with a bad play call.
All right. So David asks, this is kind of similar to one we already heard. Will the screen pass return to the playbook? I remember Sutton's teams run it from time to time and have seen Navy run it, but Army hasn't run a screen in years.
Yeah, I actually – so I don't like the way that Navy runs their screen passes. They not that they haven't been successful at times, but I've seen far more times than I think makes it effective where Navy loses yardage or it goes for nothing. Like, I don't think that a screen pass buys you anything when your quarterback is throwing from between the tackles. If it's a kind of a screen pass where your quarterback's already headed to the outside because that read's been made, then yeah, like that makes sense. But if you're running a triple option and your quarterback is throwing between the tackles, it needs to be downfield and a guy needs to be open. Because if it's not, you're doing it out of desperation. Like, think back to all of the passing plays from last year. There were a certain percentage of them, I don't know, maybe let's say it's 50-50, it's probably not, where it's early in the game, Army's in it, and a guy gets open and they hit him. And because the guy who's open has been making the same block every time, and the fifth time he's going to make the block, he slips it and he's wide open 5 yards beyond the safety, right?
Right.
And he goes for a long way.
Yep.
Then there are the times where Army throws because it's 3rd and 12, or they throw because they're down 14 in the late third, and now it's out of desperation. And it's immediately from between the tackles. I hate that. Like, that's not the passing that's going to work at a triple option program. So a screen pass is great, but do it once your quarterback is in motion heading to the perimeter, because then one read's already been made and you're doing it as an advantage, not as a last-ditch effort.
Yeah, I always think that when they drop those quarterbacks back, you know, they have a tendency to run those draws, or at least to give you an RPO that can, you know, you can call a draw. And I'm never surprised when they run it and that draw works, because obviously anybody is, you know, any defense is going to be trying to prevent the down the field pass. So,
yeah. And one of the other things that you see, you know, and a lot of the pro teams do it now, particularly because the quarterbacks are super mobile, is they move the pocket. The pocket kind of chases the QB as he moves. So he's moving towards the tackle and the protection kind of shifts towards him, which only facilitates the RPO even more, you know. God forbid if we ever get a quarterback at Army that moves like Lamar Jackson. But that being said, you know, that guy is the poster child for that. So you set him out on an island, the protection moves with him, and then he has a second run pass option, and that run is him taking off or him throwing deep or throwing to the underneath receiver. And so I think, you know, being able to shift the pocket is just as important as, you know, the mobility of the quarterback in those situations. Screens, again, there's novelty to them, but I think so many people run them now that they're easier to defend. I won't say they're easy to defend, but they're easier to defend, particularly if it's not out of a formation that Army normally runs.
So Walt points out that Drew Thatcher uses a reverse screen. Quarterback rolls out like he's going to pitch, flips his hips, and throws back across, which is a dangerous-ass play that I hope he doesn't run more than once per game. But
yeah, but it's,
I can imagine it working.
It's not as dangerous as you think, because these plays – so one of the things that Drew Thatcher likes to do is he'll take his wide receiver, and instead of the wide receiver blocking the cornerback, he'll take that wide receiver and he'll have him do a crack back block. So he'll run across the field and hit the safety. And then by the time the cornerback realizes what's going on, he's in the position of the safety. And now you have a guy who's worse at tackling, you know, having to make the tackle.
Yeah. Well, and here comes 205-pound Bryson Daly.
Sure.
Yep.
One of the things that you can do, though, is when that wide receiver is running across the field, he, the same way that you would crack back, or the same way that you would slide past a block before and get open, will have him do that and let the safety get around him. And then he just pivots and he sits there 8 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Yeah. And there's nobody for 5 yards. Right.
Yeah.
By himself. So yeah, it's kind of across the body, but it's not across the body 25 yards downfield with people, you know, into traffic.
Yeah.
It's 8 yards away. It's a pitch and catch, right? Okay. So it's a little bit different.
Dave asks, what units, quarterbacks, running backs, O-line are most challenged by the transition to the new offense? Again, I have feelings, but I will let you take this one.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think the most obvious one is the offensive line. I mean, the entire blocking scheme is changing. I think I counted them. I think it's 16, if I remember correctly. There are 16 offensive linemen that weigh 300 pounds or more this year. Yeah. I can't imagine that's ever been the case in the history of Army football before.
Yeah.
So clearly the offensive line. Number two is the quarterback. There's a lot of very specific things that you have to teach the quarterback on how to make the reads now. So a lot of what they're doing is changing. Running backs, not so much. They're still doing what they were doing. Maybe the route they run or the position they start in is a little different, but I don't see that as a massive change. The one surprise one to me that I think changes a lot is that wide receiver. They're doing so much more than just blocking the cornerback. Like, they have an entire blocking scheme themselves.
Yeah.
And they have an entire route running scheme that are brand new. Like, they might even have more to learn than the quarterbacks. I don't know that that's the case, but they have a lot. And tight ends too. But yeah, more so than the running backs, I would say.
So moving on, Rob, you want to take over? Is your connection good? You want to come back and host the rest of this thing?
We'll give it a shot. So, the last question is from Ray. What lessons can the Army offense learn from opening Kosciusko's time capsule?
Well, any messages, I guess, were organic because there was nothing there. So,
yeah. Ray said there was something in there, and apparently the time capsule was compromised and it degraded. So whatever the lessons of the past, we're doomed to repeat them in the future.
No, that is awful. All right. So, hey, just so you guys know, the tentative starting lineup has been released for the University of Louisiana. Monroe, because you got to say it correct, like you're from the South, is out right now. We're going to go through this whole offensive defensive look, you know, so starting at left tackle, we got Jordan Booby Law, Jason Filipowicz. You got Brady Small, who is a plebe. Again, he's 309 pounds, so he may rank as an underclassman, but he doesn't look like an underclassman. Connor Fanukin, 6'4", 315. Shane Buckingham, 6'4", 305. You got Bryson Daly, starting QB1, 6 foot even, 215. Miles Stewart and Jacoby Buchanan are the running backs. Ishaan Marshall has been moved to wide receiver, along with Isaiah Alston, and Liam Fortier is going to be the third wide receiver of the bunch. I mean, moving Ishaan Marshall to the outside, if you go back and you watch the highlights from last year, that guy was a weapon that was waiting to happen.
Yeah,
he was
absolutely
significantly underutilized.
By the way, so one more thing I didn't mention before, it didn't really come up, but wide receivers and halfbacks – in the new offense are sort of interchangeable. You can put a wide receiver in motion and he can be the pitch man. So I would expect to see Ijon Marshall with the ball in the backfield a decent amount this year.
I agree. I saw an article somewhere. I got to find it again and post it. But one of the things that they talked about is new RPO offenses are basically the death of position football for wide receivers and running backs. Just by the nature of the way that those offenses are run, like James said, those folks are interchangeable. And, of course, Josh Lingenfelter is bringing up as the tight end starting. On the defense, you got Chris Frey. He's listed as a defensive lineman now. He was earlier this week, he was listed as defensive end. I think it's transparent, doesn't matter. Nose tackle is Kyle Lewis. Austin Hill is the other defensive lineman. You've got Trey Sophia, Jimmy Charlo as the outside linebackers. Leo Lowen starts as inside linebacker. Spencer Jones is the other inside linebacker. You got Jabari Bohr, Cam Jones, Quindrellen Hammonds, and Max DiDomenico as your starting free safety. Special teams, you've got Alan Cooper, 6'2", 214, big old punter. That's kind of a tradition for the Army team now. Cole Talley will be doing kicks. Actually, he'll be doing the kickoff duties, and Quinn Moretzky is going to be doing extra points and field goals. The last thing I saw, you've got Cole McCutcheon as the long snapper. Miles Stewart is going to be returning kicks, and the punt returner is going to be Cam Jones. So all that being said, that's your starting lineup for Army going into the University of Louisiana Monroe game. And over to Dan for our next commercial.
Before we go on, man, Brady Small, 6 foot, 309 pound plebe starting at center. When was the last time a plebe started at center in his first game at the academy?
Was the last time a plebe started on the offensive line for game one of the season?
Yeah. I mean, the last plebe I can think of who started the first game of the season was probably Kenneth Brinson. Somebody can correct me if I missed one.
Did Robinson? I feel like Robinson did.
Oh, maybe. Isaiah Alston, I think, might have played in his first game, too. But
what is an O-lineman?
Yeah, that's nuts. Unheard of.
And by the way, one thing, the Cooper Allen, Billy Belkey are like, they're both first team the way that they list them. So you don't know exactly who's going to come out. And then Cole Talley and Quinn Maresky are the same thing. So we'll see.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, Rob.
Oh, the only thing I was going to say is the other part about Brady Small is, you know, that's a lot of trust, faith, and confidence to put a freshman in as a center. And here's why. Because, you know, those of you guys that have played in the dirt understand that the center is basically the quarterback of the offensive line. So he's making pre-snap reads. He's making pre-snap calls. And so for a coach to say, hey, look, we're giving you the nod, that's a lot of responsibility for a kid that, you know, just a couple months ago was playing tiddlywinks in high school. But,
keep this in mind, too. I mean, it might be that Army's been recruiting, you know, centers that have been in under center offenses for years. And now all of a sudden they need a guy who can snap in a shotgun snap consistently. And maybe they recruited Brady Small because that's what he did in high school. I don't know. But there's a huge change in how the center is going to be playing the game. So perhaps that had something to do with it.
Yeah. And I would also agree you're probably going to see a lot more underclassmen playing because the newer offense tailors to probably what they grew up playing in high school, right? And those guys are the least furthest removed. So if I have a firstie versus a plebe, that plebe is the least furthest removed from a wide open passing offense than that firstie who's been in the flex bone for the last 3 years. Doesn't mean that, you know, skill wise, they can't progress back into an offense like that. But from a perspective of understanding the game, the way that it's intended to be played, you know, the younger guys actually may have an advantage just because it's fresher and they have fewer reps to learn or relearn something. That's a change to the offense from what they learned before. Over to you, Dan.
All right, so we have discussed many times that Craig Oxane, the Vice President of Residential Lending for Draper & Kramer in Chicago, is our sponsor, one of our sponsors for this show. He is a member of the West Point Class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. Friends, he is one of the largest VA lenders in the country. He's going to give you super competitive rates, best deal he possibly can. Guys, this mortgage process is not a very straightforward thing, right? You're borrowing all this money. You have to sign literally two inches of paperwork to get this money. And you don't know what you're signing. And even if you sit there and read it with a lawyer, you still don't really know what you're signing. You want to deal with somebody who actually cares about you, not some call center, random box bank, you know, whatever, not some mindless website. This is how the West Point network functions, right? We, you know, Craig is helping us stay in business here at Astro Football, and we're trying to help you meet the guy you need to get the best deal you possibly can on a mortgage. Craig also does not charge lending fees for veterans. So that's a huge savings, like $1,300. $1,300, save money. So Craig Oxane, Vice President of Residential Lending for Draper & Kramer. Check him out. Link's on our website. You fill out a little form. You'll be talking to him in a couple of hours. Super easy. And everybody that's worked with him cannot stop raving about how good of an experience it is.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. And James, do you mind taking the offensive preview for ULM? We're at that point of the year where we are actually reviewing opponents. Yeah. So this is going to be great. Go for it.
ULM football went 4-8 last season. They went 3-5 in conference. That's the Sun Belt. They finished fifth in the West Division. Lost half their starters to the transfer portal going into this year. So their quarterback, Chandler Rogers, who you remember from the game last year, is now at North Texas. Left tackle Victor Cutler went to Ohio State. Guard Peyton Dunn is now at Houston. Both starting running backs are gone, and that's just on offense. We now have quarterback Jaya Wright, who should be starting this year after sitting last year. Last time he got playing time was 2 years ago in 2021. He's got 20 career pass attempts at the FBS level, 10 for 20 overall, 164 yards, two tutties, and two interceptions. Again, that's all 2 years ago, so I'm not going to draw any conclusions from that. He's got 33 carries for 127 yards and a touchdown that year as well. Most previews are saying he's more of a runner than a passer. Right now, as I said, he's a little bit more of an unknown. And then defense, you want to take that, Dan?
Sure. On defense, these guys straight up need to find some players. They finished at 109th overall in FBS football in defense last year, gave up almost 200 yards rushing per game on 4.8 yards per carry, and lost their top two defensive tackles to the transfer portal. They brought in a former top recruit, Travell Johnson, at defensive tackle from Texas A&M, which is good, but you know, they got to man a whole defense essentially with completely new players. ULM worked the transfer portal hard over the offseason, as they had to, and hope springs eternal. But this team played inconsistently last season. They have essentially no returning production whatsoever on either side of the ball. Now, listen, they're a well-coached team, and they have been good for some surprises. They beat Louisiana last year, beat Texas State last year. They beat a good Georgia State team last year. But ESPN's bottom 10 puts them third from the bottom. SP Plus has them at 129th overall. Army's a 10-point road favorite. For better or worse, this is a game Army really has got to win. So there you go.
Yeah, and so the final notes will wrap this thing up. So kickoff is at 7 p.m., 1900, for those of you that are still in the uniform. The kick will be on the NFL Network, so you better start scouring your streaming services now if you do not have that. I know there's a pretty sweet deal with YouTube Live if you haven't gotten a hold of the NFL Network. The line opened at 7.5, but as we noticed, it's since slid to minus 10 for Army. The over-under is 48.5. I would definitely bet that, and probably the spread in the parlay, to be honest. The only real thing that works in ULM's favor is the weather. Highs in Louisiana this week will be in the upper 90s, lows in the 70s, lots of humidity, and it's been cold and pleasant all summer long in New York. May get a break in the weather because we have a hurricane that is moving towards the Gulf, so it may be a cold, rainy slog. It's possible for that game. Late kickoff, we'll see, because that weather pattern from the hurricane may have moved through by then. But still may hit some far rain bands and weather effects. It's good that it's a night game, but it's still going to be way hotter, more humid than Army has experienced over the last few weeks. Thoughts on the game, guys?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think Army wins this game. You know, I took the over on Roundtable. I would take Army minus 10, but it just gives me the heebie-jeebies to do it, so I'm not going to. I will say that they need to take a lot of players, though, because it's been very, very temperate here. Like, it's barely broken 80 all summer. It's crazy, which is great. I love it, but it's, you get some cramps out there. Hydration, that's going to be a pretty serious issue.
Hey, James, how about you?
So, a couple of things. First of all, it looks like on Friday it's going to be lower 90s at 7 p.m. So it's still pretty hot. That's tough on the road at night starting. I don't know what to think of this 48.5. Louisiana Monroe scored 24 points against Army last year. Do we think they're going to score that many points this year? Like, it's the first game of the year. They have how much returning production? Do we think they're really going to score 24 points?
I personally think Army's defense is going to be way better this year than they were last year. Like, yeah, way, way better. I think Spencer Jones is an upgrade across from Leo Lowen. And I'm excited to see what that the new nose tackle brings. And they got a lot, and I mean a lot of experience in the secondary. Yeah. Plus, Jimmy Charlo really came into his own over the course of the season late in the year last year.
So then hammering the over means that if you're going to hammer the over, you have to hammer Army in the spread.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. Like, I agree with that.
Like,
I know.
If you're doing that, you're hedging your bets hard. Like,
yeah. No, I know.
That's my thing. I'm about to change my factor fiction as well. So we'll take care of that when we get there. But I think Army's defense shows out in this game. It's their first game. It'll be the first game that a lot of these players have ever started. It'll be a season opener. I think Army's defense is ready. I see Army keeping Louisiana Monroe to probably 17 points, if I had to guess. That's my hope.
Yeah, I will say this. Army tends to play better under the lights. You know, for the most part, when they have a late kick, they usually do pretty well. I can think about, you know, way back in the day when they played Air Force at Mikey Stadium. Think about Navy at Mikey Stadium for the Army-Navy game, you know, shipping in the lights to make that happen. Army plays well under the lights. I think they're gonna perform probably as expected or better on defense, and I'm going to be pleasantly surprised at how the offense turns out. But let's move into fact or fiction.
Fact.
That is correct.
or fiction?
Incorrect.
Dano, you're up.
Fact or fiction? Army throws five or fewer passes this Saturday. James.
That is tough. Against a better opponent, I think the answer would be fiction. I'm going to go fiction. I just think they're, even if they get up big, they're going to try some things just to see how it works.
Well, Rob? I'm going to say fact. And then when I roll into my fact or fiction, it's going to be even more insane. But we talked about it last week. So if you listened, you already know where I'm going.
Yeah. So, I really don't think they're going to throw a lot. I sort of think Coach Monken wants to make a statement to the fan base that this isn't as different as you think it is. I could honestly see them throwing zero passes. Maybe they throw, who knows? That Georgia State game last 2 years ago when they played at Georgia State to open the season, I think they threw four times, but they all went for touchdown passes or something insane like that. I could see something like that, but I don't know, man. I don't think they're going to throw a lot, and I definitely don't think they'll be throwing to no purpose. So,
yeah, and thanks for that, Dan. You totally stole my fact or fiction. So, fact or fiction, Army will score two TDs from passes this weekend. I think they're going to throw five times, and two of them are going to go the distance. I think those are going to be your semi-explosive plays, 25 or 30 yards. But I legitimately think, they're probably going to have some mismatches on the edge, both with A'shaun Marshall and Isaiah Alston trying to be undefended. And somebody just dropped that in the chat too. They have number 11 they're going to throw. I think they will. I don't know how much they're going to throw, but I think they will. I can see a back shoulder throw and Isaiah Alston making, the top 10 on ESPN again, because he makes some freaking astronomical catch. So what do you guys think?
I'm sorry, I'm going fiction. I'm staying with my ground and pound theory. I guess we'll see. James?
I'm going fiction. I just don't think the new offense, if it's run anything like Nebraska Kearney, is set up for over-the-top passing. It's going to be pitch and catch, 8 to 12 yards, keep the chains moving. I don't see them using it like last year.
I'm gonna stick with the pack. I'm telling you guys. I'm telling you. Just have a little faith. All right.
I hope you're right. I'd love some more touchdowns.
James, how about you?
Okay, so I'm calling an audible. Louisiana Monroe scores fewer than they score 20 points or fewer.
Oh, I'll take that. I say fact to that.
Yeah,
fact. Okay.
Yeah, I'll jump on that one easy too.
Is that fact agreement?
Yes, it is fact agreement.
The one that I was going to do, which I'll just put out there, we don't have to actually answer it, but it was going to be there will be fewer than 15 total drives throughout the game. That's both teams. Last year there were 22 in the game, a little bit higher scoring, very explosive, as we know, and obviously we're trying to avoid that nowadays, but that was going to be my fact or fiction.
That would have been a much harder fact or fiction.
Yeah, I think that one would have been way tougher, way more tougher.
Although I probably would have gone fiction. I probably would take the over. 15 gotcha. Drives is not a lot of drives, but
no, it's not.
I mean, Army. There have been Army games known to go as few as 10. So it's not unheard
okay. Of. Yeah, okay, but they've also All right.
It's tough.
But with the clock change, that's really what's going to determine the number of touches nowadays versus long
drives. The truth is, Bryson Daly is such a good runner outside the tackles that if he doesn't break a long run, I'll be very surprised. Played limited reps last year, and he broke two 60-plus yard touchdown runs.
What was the game last year where he had one play the whole game and it was a 70-yard touchdown run? Was that ULM?
Yeah, it was ULM last year. He came in late and freaking
came in for one drive and it ended up being a one play drive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. So I think there's a lot of home run potential that we'll see. All right. So we'll wrap this thing up and go to Dano's favorite thing after this last quick read. So we have a new partner here at As for Football. It's Bandwagon Fantasy Sports. It's As for Football's official fantasy college football league. It's free. It's fun. It's easy. Download the app from the App Store. Put it on your iPad if you're James, iPhone if you're everyone else. Join the Ask for Football League. Dan did a little write-up on the Ask for Football website. So just jump in. You choose eight teams from their list of 110 FBS teams and use your assigned budget, compete, and win. Dano is on top right now. He's already used some of his trades.
Yeah. Because when I set it up in week zero, I didn't realize that there was a cap for the amount of trades you're allowed to make. So I got extremely lucky when UMass won on the road because that was worth double bonus points. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm up 10-6-2. So yeah,
Dano's in the lead at 10-6-2, and then everybody else is bringing up the rear. However, there's still time for you to knock him out of that top seat. The draft closes on September the 1st. So you got a couple of days. Go to the Ask for Football website and check it out. And we'll pass it over to Dan for your...
No, James. James got a favorite James. Thing.
It's your favorite thing? All right, James, you got a favorite thing.
It's actually a least favorite thing. So I went to Great Smoky Mountain National Park last week. Hmm. Did a nice hike. Went to, saw waterfall, whole thing. It was a nice week. I will tell you, I don't understand how these businesses outside of these national parks continue to stay open. Like, if you go to Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge and those areas around, like, who the hell's going to Bubba Gump Shrimp Co. outside of the smoke? Like, why are they allowed to stay open? And it's not even that I'm mad at them. I'm mad at the people who are going there enough that they are able to stay in business. I walked by, like, a shop that had souvenirs and stuff, and in the window of that shop, there was, like, a Chinese paper fan made in China, had a picture of had a picture of Paris's skyline on it, and it said New York. Like, why are businesses that are selling these things able to stay open? Like, go get a sandwich. Go get a hot Tennessee chicken sandwich. Go on a hike, look at a waterfall, and eat your sandwich. who's going to these things? Who's spending time in these areas? It was also Jeep Invasion weekend, which was a whole other issue. But... like, I just don't get it. I don't get how you could look at Bubba Gump Shrimp Co. and a hike in the Great Smoky Mountains and have any question in your mind as to where to go.
Yeah, well, sadly, James, just like there are folks that go to those restaurants in the Great Smoky Mountains, there are people that are Army football fans, and they will probably ask the same thing about us. Like, why do these guys week in and week out watch Army football? Do they even have a team? And so I acknowledge what you just said, and I'm sure that different strokes for different folks. But
there are some strokes that are different for different folks, and that's fine. And then there are strokes that are just wrong. And you these are just wrong. Like, there's no reason to go there.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It'd be pretty interesting to think about that long term. Sounds like a deep dive for the off season, how these businesses remain open. However, for the crew here at Ask for Football and the Army Football Show, I'm Rob out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We've got nice. Oh, that's cold-blooded. Cold-blooded, Ray. Thank you. Thank you.
Ray off the top rope says, twist ending, Rob is a majority shareholder in Bubba Gump.
That's right. Because I like all different kinds of shrimps. But hey, I'm Rob, co-owner of Bubba Gump Shrimp. We've got James from Brigade Review calling out OKC and Daniel E. Cabeza coming out of Coastal Connecticut. And this has been your Army Football Show for week one. Hey, guys, we got football this Saturday. Looking forward to watching the game. And thanks for stopping by. And we will talk to you guys next time. Thanks.
B-U-L-M.
Beat 'em.
Beat 'em.
Thanks for listening to the Ask for Football Army Football Show. Tune in next week as Ask for Football brings you more Army football analysis. We'd like to thank our sponsor, FireBarn.com. FireBarn is the world's first online platform for auctions and sales of farm animals. FireBarn is dedicated to helping small farmers in America and has extended special discounts to military veterans who want to continue the growth of the small farming industry. Go to firebarn.com/military. That's FireBarn, FireBarn.com to learn more. Or to get started, email them at info@firebarn.com. Thanks again for listening to the Army Football Show. And as always, beat Navy.